Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello, I'm Andrew Main, and this is the After Things podcast. I'm joined by my usual cohorts, Justin Robert Young.
Hello.
And Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people.
Where is Kiefer Sutherland?
Exactly. This is going to be our big Star Wars podcast, our big Rogue One, guys. And here's the advice for you right now. If you have not seen the movie, go see the movie. And I would say we all say, if you like Star Wars, go see the movie. That's our thing, right? We're going to dive right into spoilers. No warning, spoilers. And I'm going to tell you right now, I 100% love this movie. Absolutely. Anything I say from now on is just a character I'm playing. Okay. It's Evil Andrew. Evil Andrew will give you his take on this movie. Okay. And he's a very cynical guy. He's a writer. He thinks he knows about storytelling and stuff. He's full of himself. I, Andrew Main, emphatically love this movie. Every single bit, and that is a
man,
fact.
Man, I'm so glad to hear that.
Wow.
Because Brian Brushwood, the actual person I am, also loved this movie. But in order to shake things up, I'm going to be confused Brian Brushwood for the next 60 minutes or so. The confused Brian Brushwood maybe says things he doesn't really mean, but that's just because he's so dumb. That's confused Brian Brushwood.
I am normally Justin Robert Young, but as I watch my flailing and floundering career, every once in a while I have to become provocateur Justin, who shields and twists his true feelings about things so to cynically grab more attention from the world. So I am not sweet, a mild-mannered regular Justin, loves Rogue One. However, the cynical, awful provocateur Justin might say things, outlandish, crazy things, just to get attention.
It's a role-playing exercise. That's all we're doing here, okay? It's role-playing exercise. Hey. And by the way, if you love this movie, we like that you love this movie. We do. If these crazy characters you're about to hear say things that like make you upset or threaten or challenge your love for this movie, that's not the intent. It's just these miserable, pathetic
caricatures.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll tell you what. If we're putting Rogue One on trial, can I begin by
Brian.
Brian. That's my name.
Brian. Yes.
In all sincerity, there's a lot that I love, deeply, deeply adore, that a lot of decisions that they went for. They were bold decisions. They were not the easy decisions. And I think in a world where, you know, there was a time that we were worried about how Disney would be stewards of the Marvel franchise, and ultimately it panned out, and they showed that they're fantastic stewards of it. Same thing with the Star Wars franchise. I adore that we saw a movie that attempted to take us to so many places we had never been before.
Yeah.
A movie that made the extraordinarily bold decision to kill off every single character.
A desert planet, a desert marketplace. Yes, go ahead.
Name any Disney Star Wars franchise movie where they would do this, where they would establish all these characters and then kill them all off. That was really
one where you don't care about the characters because you won't feel any loss.
Well, and that was kind of a funny sideways bit on there.
I am very happy that Disney owns Star Wars. I'm absolutely very. When Disney bought Star Wars, I was thrilled with it because Star Wars is a universe that I think has so much more life to it. So many more stories are going to be told. And I thought the only company I thought that would put the time and energy investment in to make that work is Disney. And the thing that made me feel good about it too was that if they didn't, when we first talked about they were going to do movies, you know, my reaction was if they don't get the first ones right, they will eventually get them right. They will make it work. They will make it work because there's a lot invested in it. There's so much potential there. So I wasn't going to panic when, you know, I Force Awakens, like 60% of that, 60-70% of that movie, I think I adore. There's a lot of this sort of plotting elements and things like that and stuff. And I think that there's things about it that I didn't, but overall it's a fun movie. I've watched it multiple times and I enjoyed it. And I thought like getting the formula there, you know? And so, and I know that there are people who care about that sort of thing. So I,
so let me say this. I think I absolutely adore this movie in concept and in the writer's room. I think the things that I disliked, I give it an A minus to an A plus in concept and in ambition, and like a C minus on execution, because the parts that I loved, I loved, if I described for you the idea of the movie, that'd be huge. What we wanted it to be was not what Disney was ready to let it to be. We wanted it to be a independent standalone movie that felt a step apart from all of the rest of the Star Wars stories that we've seen up until then. We wanted it to be an independent standalone movie. And instead, what it was another prequel. It was a sequel to the prequels.
My issues before even getting into the plot have so little to do with how much it ties into everything else and have to do with basic stuff. The moment it started, it's cool, visual thing, seeing the ship go past the rings is beautiful. And then I watched the spaceship park like a goddamn 5 miles away from the little farmhouse. And I'm like, why did he park so far away? I'm like, why?
He's got a step goal on a Fitbit. He's like, come on, I gotta get this blood pump.
His Apple Watch, like telling his death troopers, like, all right. I'm like, just let that go. But like, why is that? That seems really far away.
That didn't bother me at all. That didn't bother me in the least. What did bother me is that I liked the rebellion less after watching this movie. Well,
I'm just starting here. Okay.
And then
like there was some cool visual stuff and things like that. It was, you know, like the love, like the little droids and stuff, things like that. And then they're talking and they're still talking. And I'm like, I'm not really like afraid of this guy. And like, he talks about this child being in it, but later on he knows the girl and talks about her, and there's this weird selective memory thing going on kind of thing. And
so you had problems with storytelling elements. You felt like it didn't sweep you up.
I didn't care. I was, for the get-go, I was not, I'm watching a movie there's a long scene that's no tension, where you take a movie like Inglourious Basterds, okay?
Yeah.
And you meet, you know, that first farmhouse scene is long, but there is tension for every single moment of that. I'm watching people talk back and forth, backstory, whatever. I'm like, oh yeah, I lost my memory and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, wow, I'm not even convinced that this is the case. And this is a really, I was from the get-go. I'm like, this is just not tight, you know? And then like, let's call the babysitter. And the mom just runs out there with the gun. And this is not tactically smart for people been on the run. And maybe the mom's gone crazy or whatever. But like, I just was like, nobody's making any sense to me in the first 10 minutes of the film, from parking too damn far away to the wife who's going to go out to these death troopers with this gun. And she gets that close to them there because they're not – apparently death troopers are called death troopers because they're meant to die, not because they're actually very scary.
I mean, again, I was willing to forgive all of that. I took that to mean as kind of professional courtesy they were giving. They didn't really think that they were traitors or whatever. They thought this was a formality. These are former friends of theirs, you know. So they stepped lightly as they went in, and then found out that they were a little more serious than they expected.
Well, I mean, all right. If we're going to get into the expectation game, what I have kind of come back to in the weeks since I saw the movie is how many other movies I was excited for it to be, different types of movies. And I am certainly guilty of wanting this movie to be more expanded universe than it was. Like the ability we've all fallen in love and read these extended universe stories and understood that the gigantic palette of Star Wars can tell thousands and thousands of different types of stories with all these different kinds of characters. And by finally severing ourselves from like, oh, like the genetic lineage of the Skywalkers, that we can now kind of get characters with different complexities and different motivations and just be there in a different kind of way. And I think that was really, 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 really disappointing to see this movie not necessarily really do much with that. You know, we got very static, fairly uninteresting characters that didn't really have an arc, and we're kind of fraught with all of these you know, kind of maddening elements of like, well, why doesn't the guy, you know, we have a 45 minute monologue in a hologram, right? It's like,
I'm like, why did he get his own YouTube show at that point? I'm like, this is a really long monologue.
I think he's going to start like calling out people who are subbing to his Twitch channel. It's just like, well, thank you, Balloon Knots. Thank you for the sub.
So just from the start, right there, like I'm like, and then it's like, she's a child. And then next thing we see, it's like 30 years later or whatever, you know, I'm like, I don't know this. I know this is the woman. That's the girl. Apparently there's not been anything in her life or anything of importance or whatever. Yet you had to show,
you know what?
Most,
you're so like, right. How much would it have hurt to have a 5 minute series of 5 60-second vignettes covering her life from age 8 to 28 that just showed her being tough and standing up to powers that be or whatever.
What Force Awakens did really good with Rey was we got bits of Rey, like we understood what her life, you know, what does Rey do? You know, Rey skids around scavenging, puts on this helmet, waits for her family to show up. Whatever. We understand what Rey's life is. We get that scene of Rey next to the really old woman, you know, this great, you know, H. Abrams moment where she's scrubbing and you see this, this could be me. You know, I'm like, these are, There was a lot of criticism of Rey, and I think a lot of it was warranted, but there was a lot of depth there too, you know, and that was here. I'm like, now we pull you back into the scene because it's important to pull you in here. Like, I love New Hope because, like, you know, we cut out Tashi's power station, they cut out all that stuff. It didn't matter. We didn't get, we didn't have Obi-Wan leaving the kid on the Lars homestead, you know, like Dumbledore, you know, we just have this. No, we're just going to jump ahead to this whiny kid going to this dad to go get these robots because we don't know where his fate is. We don't know how important he's going to be. You know, we don't meet Han Solo until like, you know, like 30, 40 minutes into the movie, you know. And
even then, we don't necessarily like him. He's just a means to an end, and we half expect him to die.
He's a scoundrel, Brian.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why his reveal. From basic storytelling, like I was not pulled into any of that. And I saw it with a buddy who had the same opinion. The five of us have all have the same opinion independently about this thing. And like kept looking at each other. And like, I mean, I'll complain about how bad Grandma Tarkin looked or whatever, bad Andrew Will. I personally loved it. I was totally fooled by that. Thought it was really him. I was so glad he was still working.
I don't know who you mean.
Good Andrew was pointing that. I'm really.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. I was like, who's bad Andrew? He sounds awesome.
No, bad Andrew. This guy. It's like, I'm like, why would they? Why am I staring at Polar Express? I had no idea. I had no idea this was coming in the movie. I had no idea they brought.
I thought the first time, I don't know why it was, but the voice they used for Grand Moff Tarkin sounded just squeaky at first, and I didn't even realize. I was too disturbed by how much it didn't sound like him for me to notice how little it looked like a human being. And it wasn't until later he showed up that I was just like, wait, is this CG? Oh, this is CG. And then, of course, that's all I was able to see.
Oh, I... Bad Andrew was like the moment it's on. I'm like, oh, this is, and like I did not have no expectation this would happen. I'm like, oh, and I'm like, a friend are looking at each other like, that's really, why would, like, listen, was Bill Nighy booked that week? Was Charles Dance not available? Yeah. If he needed somebody to play, he could have cast another actor as Tarkin, which is a controversial. I don't know. We have another Han Solo. You know, we have another Lando. We have other people. And
that's a good point, man.
Mon Mothma.
Yeah, she was perfect. Hold on. Double standard, man. Let's smash the CGI ceiling. What the F word? Is it okay to recast the woman, but you got to make a CGI replicant of the man?
Well, and also it's like, and to the point earlier that, so in the New York Times, they talked about and defended the decision, which, number one,
for anybody who says it looks good, if it looked good, it would have been in the trailers, because it's not like they didn't mine every other piece of iconography from Star Wars to get people into the theaters. Number two, they were like, all right, well, people would always ask, because Grand Moff Tarkin like is so, you know, thought of together with the Death Star, that if we had a movie about the Death Star and didn't have Grand Moff Tarkin in it, people would be wondering, where it's like, I don't know what the Empire's org chart is, but yeah, just have Krennic be the bad guy who's running the Death Star. He dies at the end of the movie, and then somebody picks up a space phone and like, oh, we
bring
gotta
in
get,
that Tarkin
just move
kid.
Tarkin in. Tarkin's doing cool other stuff. Just move him. Yeah, congratulations, Tarkin. You're hired.
I was one of the things where my bad Andrew says that was a bad choice. It was just a bad choice, because it people like, it looked fine to you. But there are a lot of people who are aware it didn't really bother them. That's fine. But when you have, we're having this conversation right now.
Let's say for sake of discussion, it looked absolutely flawless. If it looked flawless, I'm still going to ask why. Why'd you do that? What was forwarded? What was gained by doing that?
I think that if I was unaware and totally unaware to it, and nobody else was complaining about it, you know, I would say fine, okay, you. It was one way to solve the problem, not the way I would have solved it, but it solved the problem. To me, it did not. It created a new problem. It created a new one. Of in the middle of this movie, I'm watching something that made Jar Jar Binks look more realistic, you know. And so I'm like, wow, that was Bad Andrew's problem with it. You know, that was, but again, that's just technical. I mean, that was a technical problem. I'm still like, I've asked multiple people, like, what's your favorite characters? And again, they point out they love Zatoichi and Tarsen Case from, I mean, sorry, they point out to the
knockoffs,
Donnie thereof. Yun's character in K2SO. And that's what I think gets me is like, big fan of Zatoichi, the blind samurai, and man, this is kind of cool that he's in a Star Wars movie, but that's Donnie Yen doing a really good Zatoichi, you know, and we
discussed this separately. I don't mind it, considering that all of A New Hope was, you know, basically just a skinned version of the Hidden Fortress? Is that
but
what it's called?
It's not. It's not. It is their element. But there is a difference between if I pick this character up out of the street right there and I put him into a Zatoichi movie, literally dressed and doing what he is, and you're like, oh, cool. That's thing. And the Hidden Fortress is it's Hidden Fortress. It's a lot of things, but it's not a skin. It's transformative. The only transformative was we'll put him in here and get credit for this great character that existed elsewhere.
Which I think the idea of having a character very much like that in a Star Wars movie is a very exciting thing for me. Like, I think that's a really cool idea. And I can very much understand where people like enjoy the hell out of this movie, because listen, the guy with the big gun, that's cool. That feels like a cool Star Wars-y kind of idea. The blind samurai that worships the Force but probably is not Force sensitive, although he kind of like, you know, gets his, you know, wish because he claps three times at the end.
And it's combat scenes. He walks in the middle of the stormtroopers who are known for their deference to the handicapped. So he can stand in the middle of them. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to give a speech from over here. And
actually,
now
in defense of the movie, that was some of my favorite stuff in the movie, because that was the first time that I got a hint that maybe the world had forgotten about what the Force was and what it meant to be a Jedi and stuff.
I just had the middle of there having a stand down. The stormtroopers have their guns aimed at people and they let this guy just walk right in, and I'm like, this is just not like, no, I didn't think Bad Andrew didn't think that anybody made this had any sort of idea of like what combat should look like or how to make it gritty or real. Because when I heard about it's Black Hawk Down and Star Wars, I'm like, great, because that was a movie that like worked really hard.
No, I would say that's the problem with this movie, is when this movie is at its weakest, when it reminds us what actual combat looks like. Because I mean, a New Hope looks nothing like real combat. Empire Strikes Back looks nothing like real combat.
Empire Strikes Back, trench battles, absolutely.
Sure. But the question is, which battle? It looks like World War II. Everything in the original trilogy looks like World War II, which is great because it's very clear who the good guys are, very clear who the bad guys are, and everything makes sense. This, when they go to space Afghanistan, and we start watching the one side that's just trying to maintain maintain order in the galaxy, get terrorist bombed by religious zealots.
But they didn't act like military trained people. You know, and that was one of our criticism of Finn from Force Awakens was like, man, from a guy who's brought up in this really brainwashed military unit, he just acts like a kid from my honors English class.
Yeah,
sure. But I guess my point is Rogue One to me was its weakest when it changed the type of warfare that it was depicting from the original trilogy. I didn't like watching Vietnam the movie movie.
I was very excited for the idea of Star Wars Vietnam. Like I wanted that movie. You know, just a 3-hour cut where, you know, it was just like, again, like I wanted Apocalypse Now. This was like
they looked like, you know, Vietnam's got a lot of palm trees. We'll do a beach with palm trees. That's Vietnam, right? That's pretty much what it looks like. And it's like, yeah, it's mud and dirt and these trenches and these paddies and these really hostile environments that are kind of pretty, but you can't get through. And it was like, that was one of my mini bad Andrews mini. I personally loved it. Thought it was very pretty and realistic.
Hey, by the way, did you guys read Peter Cerretta's breakdown of all the scenes that were in the trailer that did not make it into the movie?
Slash film. Go check that out.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
There's a fairly clear case that, I mean, famously, and this is not a secret, you know, there was a lot of reshoots on this movie. They obviously changed a lot there's a case to be made with fairly good supporting evidence that Jin's character overwent a fairly large overhaul, which I think probably hamstrung, where that character wound up going and the fact that she's as flat as she is. The ending of the movie seems to be almost totally changed. And I think that's probably part of the reason why it is just the same Star Wars space battle thing that happens, although this time that they have the Spaceballs Druidia air shield.
Oh my God.
Boy, that is an unfortunate design choice.
I'm like, why are we in Spaceballs?
It really was exactly the design from Spaceballs.
They should have just known it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Open up the code. Come on.
Yeah.
There's a reason why I had the kind of anger to the movie, and what kind of put it over the top was just all the fan service to me was so dialed up that I felt pandered to and insulted by it.
Yeah.
That's me reacting to something more than it should have, be realistically. But I felt like that. It's like, I can't go 5 minutes like without having some other, you know, little like, remember these things? They were in another movie that's more likable than this one.
Well, and I think you nailed it, and I think that's why people are taking to calling it, you know, the greatest fan movie in the Star Wars universe, is that unfortunately so much of the movie relies on remember this thing from this other thing. Those universally, from beginning to end, were the weakest moments in the movie to me, full stop. I literally, and I hate this word, cringed when I saw R2-D2 and C-3PO and Yavin 4.
I will defend that for a moment. Like when they bumped into Dr. Evazan or whatever, the two guys from the cantina, you know, I'm like, no, this is supposed to be a big, huge galaxy and they're going to bump into them and we're going to get this. This is a first. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me go back. By the way, thing that drove me nuts, start of the movie, right? I knew I was scared because one, like he parked really far away to get these really nice big visual shots of them walking towards there. Okay. Then they're inside the homestead. I'm starting the homestead and she's pouring her what to drink?
Blue milk while looking at the mirror.
Oh, it's blue milk. We're going to let the camera just stare right at, we're going to center this right there. Cause guess what? We're going to have at Star Wars Land in Disney.
Blue Milk.
No, seriously, because Butterbeer has been doing so well, they're actually going to do Blue Milk. But just like, literally, we're going to linger on the Blue Milk, damn it. And that one, bad, good Andrew, I love that. That was great. I'm like, that's great homage, you know, got to linger.
But what does bad Andrew think?
Bad Andrew's like, why did you just let this shot just settle on this? Are you just, is it because, is it this sort of Big Bang Theory sort of method of joke telling, you know, kind of thing? So it was just this very, it was like, I'm like, oh, that was not a directorial choice. That was an audience, hey, audience, wink, wink, that's what they drink, you know, which kills kind of any of the tension there or whatever. And it was just this, it could have been just a subtle thing, but it had to be put in front of us. And then when we get, you know, Pomp or whatever, those people, as they bump into them, I'm like, no, this is a very tiny galaxy now. This is a very small galaxy. Well,
and that's the problem, is that on the one hand, you get the payoff of an aha sense of nostalgia, of connection, and you're like, oh, that's related to the other thing that I like in the thing. But the trade-off is the whole thing that we all fell in love with Star Wars at the very beginning was that this was a huge, huge massive galaxy. And right. and it was so big they couldn't possibly give us the center of it all. They started the story at a backwater, a podunk small town in the corner of this galaxy to get it all started.
Farthest place from anywhere.
And yet here we are, 14 movies later, and I'm pretty sure the entire galaxy is exactly, I don't know, 4 set pieces wide and 3 characters tall.
I did not have a problem showing them, you know, with the rebels, because they were with the rebels. I had no problem with that, even though theoretically they would have been, you know, they belonged, I think, Captain Antilles, you know, they belonged to Wedge Antilles. That's who we belonged to, whatever. I had no problem with that. But remember how we saw them. The context we saw that was the rebels decide they're going to go send the fleet to Scarif to go back them up.
Yeah. Right?
And they're waving. Next time we see R2-D2 and C-3PO, they are where?
They're on the ship.
On the ship.
Which means, okay, and I'm glad you said this, because somebody was saying like, no, it was pretty clear they were part of the fleet. They were getting on the fleet. That's what Tom Merritt, that's my bad Tom Merritt impression. But what I saw, it looked like they went off, they won the battle, they got the super floppy disk of doom, and in the middle of 12 9/11s, Leia says, ooh, we got hope, a new hope, one might say. Wink! And then let's go back to Yavin 4 to pick up those 2 droids. While we're there, whatever we do, let's not make a copy of all this. Let's just keep on running to this backwater planet that we're pretty sure we left.
So they go
Ben
back
Kenobi
to
Yavin
with the plans, but they don't drop off the plans, but they pick up the droids.
I was not a fan. Not a fan.
No, so we have to assume that they're like, oh, R2, let's go. We need to go be with them. Which yeah. I'm like, it's like, okay, let's talk about like silly, like thank you. This, which she's the digital, the actress with the CGI Carrie Fisher face on there, which has made me very, very sad before she passed and made me even more sad. And that weird line, and she's smiling. It's like this devastating loss, and she's happy because we're getting new hope. Okay, Vader, the Puninator.
Okay, let's talk about it. There are problems with the fan service in this movie. We didn't need to see the 2 dudes from the cantina. We didn't need to have a wedged in C-3PO, R2-D2, and Princess
I loved
Leia
it.
And Tarkin.
I loved all of that, Brian.
I know you did.
All of that.
Well,
let me do Bad Andrew. Bad
I know.
Andrew.
Bad Andrew, there are things Darth Vader does not do. He does not do a dance like MC Hammer, and he does not make bad puns, because let me tell you, if Darth Vader were to enter an O. Henry pun off, he would win, and it would be with biting, cutting, throat slitting sarcasm. It would not be eye rolling, groaning. What does it mean to choke on your own aspirations?
I mean,
aspiration
just
means
saying,
to breathe.
Brian, it seems like that line was a little forced.
Okay. I'm this close to just walking away.
Dang, regular Darth Vader over here with my puns.
And by the way, I do forgive. There, some people are giving guff about the fact that he lives in you know, the planet
We'll move to that in a second. But let's so there was this like screen where, like, in defense of Darth Vader's pun. It was very much in character for him. It's like, all right, I don't want to be one of these people like, you don't get comedy, but I'm bad, Andrew will tell you, you don't get comedy. Because, like, yeah, you know, name a famous comedian whose last name isn't cable guy who is known for puns. Name me a famous comedian who makes puns. And even that guy, who I do love, actually, is they do them as groaners, and they're always these groaners. They're called puns are known as groaners, and they're not a staple that anybody really does comedy does.
Which
they are
you
not a
can
thing you do
if you're immediately self-deprecating and sell after the fact. Like the next line after a groaner is what? You know, we're all going, oh, you're too big,
also,
you're too good for that.
I was thrilled that Darth Vader was in this movie because I wanted him. This is how I envisioned this movie, is that we have a ragtag group that's going to, you know, through whatever means, find these plans for this ultimate killing station, right? And that they're going to be chased at every turn. Just two steps behind is the enforcer of the Empire, the one who gets everything done, but the ruthless efficiency, the killing machine, Darth Vader, right? And that, forget puns. I didn't want him to talk. You don't need to talk if you're Darth Vader. You walk into a room, you murder everybody. You just point at a thing. How did that get there? I don't know, Lord Vader. I don't know. Ah, you're murdered. Yeah. I'm Darth
but
Vader.
He never made a pun in the original three. I'm going to point that out. Like, he never made a pun in the original three. And there's the people like, oh, it's like, no, he does sarcastic. He will do these biting things. Apology accepted. You know, that's hilarious and funny and just dark, dark, dark. He's never, you know, like, you know, I will mop the floor with your expectations. You know, never, never did that because it was really good writing. This dumb pun was like, we need to put him like, how about the don't joke on your aspirations? Was he high-fiving, you know, his guards and stuff afterwards?
Nailed
like, that was good. Oh.
Did you hear it?
Hey,
did
Crimsy,
you hear it?
Crimsy, come on over here. Did you hear that? Were you there? I know you don't listen, but seriously, you heard that, right?
All right, Justin,
I mean,
you know
and then
on?
Also, like he's
got
to force-choke somebody because that was a thing in the other movie where he force-chokes people. And it's like, this has been my question. I want to ask both of you guys. Finally, let's see if we can hash this out.
They directly antagonized him. It wasn't like his form of a reprimand. It was like, I think the force is silly. Oh, silly? Just hold on. Let me get line up my little fingers with your throat here. Does that feel silly? Okay. Yeah. And it's like, hey, Vader, I did a dumb thing. You know?
Yeah. Well, there we go. I'm gonna dumb thing your spine. How about that? I'm Darth Vader. I murder people.
Could you tell the Emperor that I'd really like to be appreciated? Oh, I'm going to choke you for that one. How did I personally offend you on that?
Yeah, also, since when is Darth Vader in charge of HR in the Empire? Is that where you go to? Is he your ombudsman? You got to go and file a grievance?
Well, and also, it's like, all right, so in my mind, I thought we were going to get a different movie, but the movie that they wanted to tell was very much reliant on the inner workings of the Empire and the Rebellion. And I feel like with both, I wound up knowing less, or certainly less that was interesting about both organizations. Like, we don't necessarily see that the Empire is overconfident, but they have this gigantic reservoir of money that they're spending on this. Like, I have no idea. It seems like just plot contrivance that, you know, the Rebellion, whose entire job is to stop the Empire. We don't know whether or not, like, this is a point of transition for them. Are they mostly a political thing that now they have to embrace more of the guerrilla warfare element? And, you know, they fight about, like, it might be a trap. But that's doesn't tell you anything about the organization.
They were as organized as an Occupy Wall Street meeting trying to decide the speaking order of what they're trying to first. It was like they when you were like, everybody's here, the moral ambiguity, like, because, you know, Saga were like, this guy, his techniques, we don't agree with. Let's send this our hitman who just murdered one of our own assets, by the way, to go get to the bottom of this. But meanwhile, like, we don't really buy this theory that you have about the Death Star, even though our prime number one agent is in the other hangar. And we could bring him in here and ask him. We're not going to do that. So,
Well,
and then he's, wait, the assassination, right? He set up his sniper mount on the balcony, and I don't know why he decided that was where he was gonna go. Cause like, did he get it? Did he, like, you know, Krennic likes to pee off the balcony, found out. That's his thing. Likes to pee off the balcony. If you want to get him, that's where you're gonna shoot him. Like, he's waiting for him to just show up there or whatever to do that kind of thing. Cause it wasn't like he was flying in a shuttle to meet there. He was already there, but it was like, whatever, something kind of things happen, whatever. And then I just was like, I don't, this makes like Rebels, the Star Wars Rebels show can be a fun cartoon. This had as much logic as one of those.
I would say Rebels is maybe even a little more consistent in its logic.
I was unkind.
What's that?
Balloon nods, meeting on the balcony, 9 p.m., rain or shine.
Exactly. And it's like, they crashed. They crashed within, like, distance of there in the secret base, and nobody's like, you know, what was that noise? I don't know. Nobody knows where we are. Carry on. It was just this. Well,
and I guess it's like, for as it becomes clear that they want to tell a story about this ragtag.
I find your lack of paperwork disturbing.
You know, it's
block a deal.
It's not Ocean's 11. We don't quite know how all these people are going to have to grow and change, or they have special skills to take on this mission. You know, the rebellion. I mean, like, why do we even like the rebellion? Like,
oh, no. I definitely like them less after this movie. I like them the least I've ever liked them after this
movie.
And
also, like, Mon Mothma, in her moment of courage under fire, is like, all right, I'm pretty sure that there is a massive thing that we need to move on immediately, right? And I've dispatched my best people. I'm consulting with them directly. Let's take it up for a vote. Should we do this thing that I'm pretty sure is of major importance? I don't know. It might be a trap. Like, all right. Well, we voted. So so there we go. That's me, Courage Under Fire, Mon Mothma. We're just going to – sure. I mean, like – and she doesn't go behind their back and be like, all right, no, I know I have to be the president here. But, like, you know, y'all need to go take this out immediately because I'm secretly – showing courage here.
I was like, they're like, we think it's a trap. You know,
yeah.
We know.
Like, I think your face is dumb. I'm Mon Mothma. We're going forward.
Well, we
with
know
this
they've been mining kyber crystals out of there, but we think it's maybe because they're empires into artisanal jewelry. We think that's why they're doing it. And you know, yes, we've heard your story that they just wiped away a city with a super weapon, and we could check that. But we're not gonna. And that was like other two is like little convenience. Like, oh, we need to tell, like, when they're like on the Imperial planet, like, oh, we could send a transmission. No, we're too deep into Imperial space to go do that. Like, when has that been a thing? That's a reason not to do a thing.
Well, and I was a little annoyed also that they fired the Death Star four times in the movie. That, like, where it's like, and it's not even like, because if you're thinking like, oh, this is like a proto. Number one, I think were all of you surprised that the movie did take place as close to A New Hope? Because it was really only like when we got well into the movie that I was like, oh crap, this is like 5 minutes before A New Hope. Well,
you know what I secretly hoped for? What I hoped it was going to do, like my problem was just like, yeah, the one we're watching a fire, and then, you know, a guy who remembers, you know, Star Wars and was actually called Star Wars before it became A New Hope, like 2 years later in the re-release, you know, you know, as soon as this battle station is operational, which means functioning, you know, in the, you know, which it wasn't, it was there waiting for it to go online, but apparently it was online, but now we had to sort of like, yeah, but it sort of wasn't, it was they didn't get their OSHA certification. So yeah. I'm one that, but the thing that I was secretly hoping for, like the thing I kind of want to, like, how cool would it have been if they did kind of a Back to the Future 2 kind of thing where we find out they were in the trench run 2 and they were there and they got blown up or whatever, or they were part of that, you know, or they got Cap killed by, you know, or something cool happened. They got captured or tortured or killed by Vader. And then
make them a part of the same story at the same time. Basically pull in Ender's Shadow. Ender's Shadow was a companion novel to Ender's Game that took place from, it was one of the minor characters in Ender's Game, but you followed him, his backstory, and it ended at the same time as Ender's Game did. That would have been awesome. Look, there's a million things that would have been really, really fun. But instead, they made a joyless thing without joy.
God. Or, you know, if you want to go like just really like, you know, they get captured, they're rounded up, they're in a cell, you know, and we don't know where it is. And then we hear over the loudspeaker, oh, main hit on the exhaust port. You know?
Yeah. Oh,
you
know? Like they're just, prisoners like on the Death Star. And then they watch it happen.
Hands, you know?
Yeah.
I'd be like, that would be like, I'd be crying. I would be crying, but they're like, this is what I'd be like, oh my God, that's so, it's so tragic. But
that would have been amazing. That would have been amazing.
Yeah. That would have been, there's,
I wanted Bakadal so bad.
Suggesting that maybe they could have gone back to the Old West and met Mad Dog Vader.
I got to tell you, I wanted this to be a movie that could stand independent. I think I said this on Weird Things beforehand. Like this should be the first movie since our childhoods that was fully independent, and it was not in any way. If you're not familiar with the rest of the story, this is a weird-ass like, movie that makes no sense.
Why? That's scary. People loved it. People had no – I mean, the people – I think some of the people kind of clapped the loudest weren't as connected.
I
disagree. I'm not the loudest, but I mean, it's doing great.
I think that it is a weird – and I think Red Letter Media did a good job of saying like, hey, look, take all the Star Wars out of it, right, and just make it sci-fi the movie, right? And it's just all different stuff, and they're not X-Wings, they're other weird ships, and it's not a Death Star, it's a planet killer, and you know, whatever. Like, what do you have? Like, what, why are we super excited when the pun slinging villain ? Murders a bunch of people, and then somebody that we've never met and has never been referred to in the story gets a thing and says a word. It's like, okay, I guess that's, I mean, I guess they're important, maybe. I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it being tied into or whatever, but I do think that if it can't stand on its own, it's a problem. And like, and you know, and this movie was so heavy with the Star Wars cocaine. You know, that's what I was like, yeah. Star Wars cocaine. Like, oh, look, what do we need to do? A little Star Wars cocaine. We'll have these guys from, you know, put some blue milk here. Okay, good, good, good. Okay, yeah. The guys from the cantina. All right, it's good, it's good. We like Vader. We're going to like the fact that Vader's got this back to tank. All right, good. I don't know how you do cocaine, but that's my impression
yeah.
of that.
Yeah,
that,
no. You're nailing it. Keep going.
Yeah. He's like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, wait. Hey, remember those, the dancing girl from Jabba's Palace? Well, there's hollow porn. And somebody's fucking jerking off.
All right, this movie's on rails. You know? That was my problem. It was like so much Star Wars cocaine, and you pull that out. You're like, and that was our criticism. Force Awakens was, you know, it just borrowed like, you know, we there's where we wanted to go in different places. Well, you know,
I'll tell you what. Remember, we had Bryce watch Force Awakens, and he had never seen any of the Star Wars movies, and he was like, "Yeah, I got the vague sense it was really kind of insidery, but I guess it was okay." I would not wish or pay enough money to have Bryce go see Rogue One. Rogue One would be total nonsense to somebody who doesn't know Star Wars.
Well, and you know, so I rewatched Force Awakens, and I really liked Force Awakens the second time I watched it.
Especially, I liked it a lot too.
Like there's like moments from Maz Kanata's castle on, you know, there are some weird story things that are a little weird, but like at the end of the day, man, I love the character. The characters are so fun. They're so magnetic. They're so charismatic that it's like, okay, that's fine. There's some dumb story stuff here, but like, you know, it was good. It was good to see those people do stuff. And I think rewatching it, it's like, hey, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that is like, oh, we're touching back to this original trilogy, but it's a story that starts our protagonist literally mining nostalgia for money. Like she's literally mining old relics of the original trilogy so she can survive. So I think that there's a little bit of that priced in there. Like, I think that that's kind of what they were going for.
Can I? I'm going to point something out here, too. It's like they did, like, they had a, they had the explanation of why Felicity Jones doing the, hey, I'm Jyn Erso is a totally different character than Rey, because they knew that was going to be a problem. Like, they actually had this little, like, the, you know, this funny, oh, have you heard this video where she explains why she's different or whatever? Like, oh, yeah, I know two Americans, all British people are the same, but, you know, you're stupid to think that we're the same characters, whatever. It's like,
yeah, because I'm dressed like Han Solo and she was dressed like Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, so yeah.
Rey had a toy Rebel Starfighter, X-Wing fighter pilot stuffed doll. I had a Stormtrooper stuffed doll named Stormy because I was raised by the Empire. When Rey was abandoned as a child, we didn't get a lot of backstory details as she was left on, you know, her world. When I was abandoned as a child and put in the arms of this very, you know, guy on the other side of this nebulous sort of character that was to become this sort of, you know, scavenger. When I was put into the hands of this sort of nebulous sort of underworld kind of character, he was not a scavenger, totally different. He used scavenge parts for his stuff. Very, very different backstories. Let me be very clear. We both clearly have abandonment issues by the Empire. You know, it's very, but we're very different people. And yes, you know, Luke Skywalker was also abandoned because of the Empire, but that's different too. Just to be clear, we're very different. It's very, very different backstories here.
Balloon Knots nails it. It's like poetry. It rhymes.
Right.
You're killing me.
That was one of the things, like, wow, like, yeah, be different. Why could, like, I'm like, man, like, imagine if, like, she, like, I would have loved, like, again, I would not to try to rewrite the same, which is a mistake, but it's like, you know, imagine like a teenage Jyn and some dude are on their idyllic farmer planet, and all of a sudden the Star Destroyer comes overhead, and we get this kind of, like, you know, up sort of narrative of, like, the two of them deciding to enlist and fight against the Empire, and then, you know, loses him or loses her sister or her friend or whatever because of the rebellion and runs away from the rebellion, you know?
Yeah.
Pick up there. Pick up, like, give her, like, a soldier story. Give us a soldier, not the wounded little girl story or whatever. I would have been like, man, I'd know something about her, you know?
Yeah, or even when they keep talking about things that are more interesting than what's happening, like when Forrest Whitaker's like, oh, man, remember that crazy time where I trained you to be like this ISIS super killer, but we were with so many, like, effed up, morally dubious people that, like, I had to abandon you. That was the kindest thing that I could do, was abandon you because they were finding out who you were. Like,
and even though you showed up and told them who you were, nobody cared just now.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, remember, that was crazy. That was a crazy cool time. Movie. Anyway, you want to go visit my telepathic hentai tentacle porn monster
I'm running an insurgent daycare. You want to go check it out? It's like, it was like, what is this play? I don't get what they're doing here, kind of thing.
Well, because it's like, all right. So this brings us back to the kind of rebellion thing where it's like, I could understand if part of this story is a battle between Mon Mothma and Bail Organa, where it's like Bail Organa's like, hey, look, like, we have to push every political thing that we can, right? And we need to be like, it turns out you want to know what we might actually
I know
be able
somebody
to make.
I can trust a lot.
Yeah. It's like we might be able to make a deal. Here's what we're going to do. And Mon Mothma's like, no, you want to know what? Like, we need to resort to guerrilla warfare. Like, we need to start blowing shit up. And so that's why I'm going to turn to ISIS to be like, hey, look, sometimes we gotta become more of a militarized kind of rebellion. And now there's a back and forth there instead of it just being like, no, we're the rebellion because we're the rebellion after all. The rebel line was cut. But anyway, we're here today to stop
what
the
will
Empire.
You do? Oh, that got cut too. And then when the thing, the city is exploding, you're not coming, like, nope. I'm gonna give you I love the way Man of Steel had several father figures die. We're gonna use that playbook, so I'm gonna stand here and get exploded because
but like you could be like a really valuable resource, like maybe your wisdom and knowledge would be helpful to us.
It's a suicide mission, you know, we're going on a suicide mission.
We could really use somebody who doesn't care. Maybe somebody cares about a cause that doesn't care about his own life. I feel like that maybe,
you know what, or also somebody that's like seen the horrors of what it's going on. Cause I feel like if we ever get to a point where the entire rebellion's fate is decided by four people arguing around a table, that you would be great arguing for our side. That would be cool. If you could, you don't have to really go anywhere. Just go to Yavin and just, you know, be part of these arguments if you could probably just die here.
Contribution to the entire storyline was he was the guy, the pilot, who was not Diego de Luna because he had glasses on his head. He was the guy the pilot went to so the pilot could find his way to the rebellion. That was it. He was intermediary that had nothing that really weighed in or whatever other than creating this conflict in the middle with an explosion and stuff. I've said this before. It's like I wanted to do like the Obi-Wan speech from Revenge of the Sith, which a new movie I did not like. Andrew didn't like. Where it's like, you were the chosen one. This was the movie that was going to make the Star Wars galaxy this bigger place where we could go off and do other stories. This is the one where you're unfettered with Force mythology and all these other things. It was the one that could say, Let's do a gritty, low budget, you know, like Star Wars story that's like really like a war movie. Which, if you watch more movies, this is not a war movie. This is not a war movie, folks. This is a Star Wars movie.
The problem is I don't even know why they treated it as a war movie when it's a heist movie. It's supposed to be a heist movie. There's a MacGuffin that you have to get from a heavily secured whatever. How much fun would Ocean's 13 have been?
But then it's like when they get to the heist thing too, it's like, yeah, we don't really have a lot of security here. Oh my God. And like in the middle of the heist, like, okay, we need to plug we need to plug a wire into this thing on the beach where there's literally there was a button on a control panel on the beach that it's really critically.
It was literally called the master switch. They're like, flip the master switch.
Is that how we, you know, call the score in the volleyball game in the middle of the tournament there? It was like literally this switch in the middle of the beach. They asked to run and get this. Like, this is like when we gave Star Wars heat for Obi-Wan Kenobi having to shut down the force field generator with these switches. That's a masterstroke of genius. And I understand how this, and I'm watching trying to get to the button to press the button that I could not tell you what that button did right now, but it was really important because we realized, you know, like,
the master switch allowed the shield to let a transmission out that could let out the transmission of, hey, Rebellion, please bust a big hole.
Exhaust port.
And let us out. But could not transmit, hey, Rebellion, here's the actual plans that we're sending you.
Well, and also it's like, the Rebellion has no assets inside the Empire. Like, they don't have any. I mean, I guess they had that the Bodhi was maybe he's an asset that was being developed, like, but there's nobody that they got. I mean, like, isn't that the point of a rebellion, like a decentralized rebellion, is you can just have anybody be like, oh yeah, no, can you go apply to the Empire and like be a model employee and see how high you can get up?
And then like there's Chekhov's death troopers. We're like, I'm like, when they did, like, they had like the stormtrooper voice but even more garbled and stuff, I'm like, oh, that's cool.
I thought that was cool.
I was sort of like, again, when they parked a mile away from the house at the beginning, I'm like, this is not a very tactical operation. And then there was never anything about them. Why are they death troopers? Because they're black armor instead of white armor. There was nothing menacing. And then, like, you know, finally on the planet, like, Krennic is like, well, I'm going to go look into this myself or whatever. And it was just, oh, they were so.
Because that's.
The only way that you get your quarterly empire bonus is if you show high marks in doing everything, and you don't want to, you know, I mean, geez, I'll tell you what, my wife will never let me live it down if I let Tarkin take my credit. I'm going to go tell on him.
I went my red stapler. I was like, it's like Death Tree. Like, man, like how cool would have been that they were like a SEAL team in the very beginning, busting into the farmhouse and stuff, broken glass and screaming and stuff. And like, just make you feel like you're in a real action movie.
it also would have been cool.
Every one of these are Star Wars. Every one of these has been a war movie. And the battle scene in Empire Strikes Back is one of the best battle scenes in any movie ever, in my opinion.
Yeah, you hear that? Microphone? Knocking down the mics are so excited.
That's a hot take for you.
Evil Andrew. Evil Andrew.
Yeah. Evil.
No, guys, I loved this movie.
Are we worried about the future? Because, listen, Marvel had the Incredible Hulk. Before they kind of like perfected exactly what the Marvel movies are supposed to be and who is in control of them. Does this make you less excited? And let's forget episode 8 for a minute, but just for all the other standalone stories.
Honestly, I thought this would be the movie where they finally moved beyond the original IP to date. And it turns out it won't be this movie. It'll be the Han Solo movie or something, or like it'll be like they have
I wonder if he's gonna do the Kessel Run. I wonder if he's gonna do the Kessel Run in the movie. I wonder.
I wonder if he's gonna win
the Millennium Falcon. I wonder if Lando's gonna win Cloud City in a Sabacc game.
So they mined it dry.
They mined it dry. There's nothing left. We've reached peak nostalgia, and we're on the downturn. Nostalgia is over 6,000 credits an ounce.
May I say something here?
I don't know. Is this regular Andrew or evil Andrew?
It's evil Andrew.
Okay,
evil
go ahead.
Hey, I beat up regular Andrew. Okay. Evil Andrew's going to point out something here, okay? I think there are strong writer directors, and I think there are directors who have a grasp of writing, but aren't necessarily writing isn't the strongest thing, and they haven't been working on that as much as directing. Okay, Force Awakens. I think that it brought a lot of J.J. Abrams' strengths into what had to have been. Who knows what it's like trying to make a movie, you know, with the. In the Disney machine. And that's the thing I'm going to say about Rogue One 2 is like, I think extremely talented people all around. Okay.
Yes.
Absolutely talented people all around. And I know that is a challenge. I would say that as a writer director, Gareth Edwards' last movie he wrote was Monsters, which was a beautiful movie, very, very beautiful movie, but that's the last movie he wrote. He was a director on Godzilla. He was, he's a young guy who hasn't had as much opportunity to say, this is what I need. This is what I want. He is still a guy that has to be beholden to producers and stuff. Okay. And producers have to protect their interests and try to make these decisions, but and sometimes being a kind of a risky vision can be problematic. Okay. Rian Johnson, first movie, Brick, is a fantastic, extremely well-written, well-directed movie. I loved Brick. I thought Brick was wonderful. I thought Brick was extremely well done. Then he went and he did
Looper?
Brothers Bloom.
Oh, Brothers Bloom was great.
Brothers Bloom. And Brothers Bloom is, you know, if anything, people say it feels Wes Anderson-ish or whatever, and there's things like that. But you know that there was thought about the characters and details put into there. It was still a very well thought through movie. OK, then he did Looper, which went into a genre, which is a done to death genre, you know, an extremely, you know, time travel, whatever. Great tight movie, was able to direct a movie with Bruce Willis as a new director and get a movie that was, you know, serviceable out of that. Who would love Bruce Willis, but people talk about working with him, you know. And so Looper, I thought, was a really, really good movie, really, really good movie. And so I would say what I'm looking forward to with episode 8 is that Rian Johnson has all the tools that I say you need to make something like this work. I think he's a strong director. I think he's a strong writer. I am hoping that it's going to work. I'm worried about Han Solo because although I like Kazdan, it's Kazdan and his son wrote it. And I don't know that having those guys and then these two guys who I think are great, you know, great directors, if their visions work together, that's going to be great. But if there is a different sort of pull in one way or the other, you know, and so, you know, lucky break having your dad be the guy who directed or wrote Empire. So you get a, you know, Han Solo movie. And I'm sure he's got his own credits as a writer too. So I'm not disparaging that at all. And he has to certainly had to show up and deliver to do that. Cause that can be hard. That can work against you, having, you know, family credit like that. But that's my tension about Han Solo. It's not like, you know, like if it was the Russo brothers or whatever, who I think are doing amazing stuff on the Marvel universe. So I think Lord and Miller are great directors, and I think they can do great stuff. 21 Jump Street's great. If it's this movie isn't too campy, I'm nervous about Han Solo. I'm more nervous about Han Solo than Episode 8. Episode 9, I love Jurassic World. I thought Jurassic World was a fun movie. I think that there's only so much you can do in a franchise about dinosaurs eating people, and I thought Jurassic World was a really fun, delightful movie that did a great job of that. Not everybody loves it. I had fun with it. I said I enjoyed it thoroughly. So Trevorrow's a writer. Trevorrow did Safety Not Guaranteed. He wrote Jurassic World. And so as a writer director, I think he's good. So I'm more encouraged about where the main movies are going right now.
I would agree. I very much hope that we don't. That Disney learns some of the lessons from this production and that they knew that this was a problematic movie, you know, from the point where they were like reshooting it within an inch of its life, apparently, to the point where literally that first trailer is not a trailer for this movie. Like all the most interesting elements of that trailer are like, okay, can we trust Jin? Is Jin so battle hardened that maybe, you know, she feels the pull toward the Empire, right? Or that like there's all this element of like, oh, okay, well, is this worth fighting? You know, maybe it's easier just to give up to the Empire, but we're, you know, that we have these characters that have this deeper moral kind of sense to them. Maybe even coming in conflict with their friends and family. None of that's in this movie.
Well, good news. Not only can you trust her, Justin, she is going to go into a spaceship full of battle-hard rebel veterans who volunteered for a suicide mission, and she's going to give them the inspirational speech.
Yeah,
because, yep. You know, they were clearly, I was like, why does, I don't like, you know, it's like, I just showed up in the new group. Hey guys, let me tell you. Yeah, thanks. I'm going to go to the locker room and, you know, I'm going to give the, you know, football team.
You know, I'll say though, that Empire, they put their space pants on one leg at a time. Like anybody else.
Mr. Lombardi, I'm going to let you speak. But first, I'm going to say something here. It's this millennial, let me put myself in there and be the most important person in the room thing. It's about my journey.
So, yeah, you know, listen, I am more worried for Han Solo than I was before. But I still think that Lord.
Well, how good can it be? Because you know he lives.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think that Lord and Miller are. That they've shown, they've always overwritten for what they do. And, you know, even going back to Clone High, you know, that was a show that's a very, very silly, stupid cartoon that has, you know, such a great handle on tropes of that genre that they can like, you know, you feel for the characters so they can get into these wacky situations. And I think that if they can bring that to Han Solo, then it'll be fine. It's just, after watching Rogue One, and I'm just like, it's everything that Han Solo has ever said in any of the other movies. They're just going to make sure that he's doing that in this movie. Like, and Jabba the Hutt is going to be in it. And
damn it. You know, why did you have to even say that? Because now I know it's going to be true. Like that was my least.
Greedo's going to be in it. At some point, Jabba's going to be like, Greedo, I hear Han Solo's on Tatooine. You better go get him. Oh, oh, oh. Hey, don't get shot first. Anyway.
All right. Yeah, I can't. Look, they need to kick their nostalgia
habit. Meet my new friend. He loves my jokes.
Hey, you, bus boy, Bib Fortuna, why don't you become my new major domo?
All right, look, they got a problem, and we need to have an intervention. Like they are hard on the N. They have a hard N for nostalgia, and we need to break them of that addiction. It's really
I got a
movies.
Bad feeling about
that. No, you don't stop it.
What did I tell you about telling me the
stop it? No.
Oh my God, dude, Han Solo's totally gonna get something made of carbonite and make a joke about getting stuck in it.
Oh, geez.
He's gonna get like a carbonite desk, and Lando's gonna be like, "You better be careful because you'll get stuck behind it." And he's like, "Oh, never!
All right,
I'll never
shut,
get
I'm
stuck."
Well, shut
what
this
happened
down.
With the last girl?
She I'm said stopping it. Yeah, gross. Look! I don't need you ruining movies that haven't even come out yet. Just stop it with the nostalgia. No more.
Well,
listen up.
Well, and yeah, guess who's gonna have the Millennium Falcon to start with?
Stop. Shush.
That's for sure.
And
shush.
And I win the Sabacc game.
Stop it. No more. I'm tired. No.
I mean, but all right. So there is an element
maybe
of that.
Maybe I'll get into real estate now, Han.
I don't want to.
The sky's the limit.
Stop.
Oh, you know, Lando, you just got your head in the clouds.
Stop it. Stop. That's I want to believe, and you guys are not going to make it any easier. Stop it.
I'm Lando Calrissian. I have a great appreciation of all the deals I make. They never go better or worse than the deal that I make. It's definitely not a thing where it gets worse all the time. I'm Lando Calrissian.
Stop it.
Chewbacca, you're a real Chewbacca, aren't you, man? You're crazy.
Stop it. Kata Wag in the chat says, "I love you, Mom. I know. I hate it when you say that." Turns to camera and winks.
Our previous record
is 13 parsecs.
Stop it. You guys are going to make me not believe anymore. You're taking away Santa Claus. Stop it. Stop.
My friends always arrive on time, especially when the Empire's chasing them. I'm Lando.
Never drop my ship at the first sight of an Imperial cruiser.
Could be worse.
I bet you, man. Dude, there's this leaked scene I read from the new Han Solo movie where Han's learning how to be a pilot, and he cuts class the day that they're teaching about how to spot a space worm. And he's just like, when am I going to need that, assholes? I'm Han Solo.
Then apparently, like, spaceship repair.
Yeah.
You know, the problem is like, this is what I'd like to see. Like,
now we know why it's always broken.
Like, I would love to see, like, this thing, like, with Rey, like, previous, like, when she's first on Jakku or whatever, trying to fix this, the Millennium Falcon. It's like, fixing this part. It's like, yeah, it's this goddamn long hair I keep finding in everything. It ruins everything. Because Chewbacca had long hair. And if you have a big dog, the hair gets everywhere. Right. If people clean out like their hard drives or their computers and stuff and find dog hair everywhere. So
You're killing me. I'm out.
Hawkman's
on Mos Eisley at the end, and B. Arthur's character from the holiday special turns to face the camera. Welcome.
That I'd be okay with. So question for you guys.
Yeah.
I love Lord of the Rings. The three movies. I thought they were really, really good. And like Two Towers was the one that was weakest for me, but it was actually one of the strongest ones too, by the way. You know, I thought those three movies were amazing. I even love watching the extended editions.
Gold standard for fantasy. The gold standard.
After I saw the first Hobbit.
Yeah.
I mean, in the middle of the first Hobbit, I was just heartbroken. And then I saw the second. I never saw the third. And it had the big drop off. It had the Hobbit movies had that. That's, you know, a franchise in peril as you watch the drop off, you know, of from next movie to the next. And the Potter movies had been like up and down all over. So Here's my question. So at that point, I'm like, my comment was, who would ever think I'd be looking more forward to another season of Game of Thrones versus a Hobbit movie?
Yeah.
You know, so another Peter Jackson in that world movie. Where's your enthusiasm now? Bad Justin, bad Brian, because I, as Andrew Main, more through the moon. I don't know how they'll top it. I'm worried because I don't know how they top this.
Wait, but. I'm sorry. You're saying another movie in that universe?
Star Wars. How is your
has this damaged your enthusiasm for
future? Where is your enthusiasm a month ago versus now?
Well, here's the problem: is my enthusiasm was at an all-time high because I thought they were breaking out of the prequel or the pre-existing mythos and going somewhere else. And instead they just really, really didn't. And our next window is the next time Halley's Comet rolls around. And that'll be because they're not going to break out of it with the Han Solo movie, not going to break out of it with episode 8 or 9. So I guess it's 4 years next time the Olympics rolls around, I'll have a chance for maybe a story that's not the same garbage.
It sounds like these Han Solo jokes really broke you.
They really broke me. They really broke me. I was optimistic, and then I realized I have nothing to live for in this fantasy. I'm done. I'm out. I'm dead, and your jokes killed me. I'm done. I'm out.
And then this the side. And don't worry. Nobody's gonna say it's not gonna be a vision. It's not gonna be an auditory joke. We're just gonna see like Boba Fett sticking his fork into some like some sushi looking thing, and these like tentacles are gonna like come at him. You know, he's gonna stab at it. You know.
I have no faith. I have no reason to have faith. I'm done. I'm out. I'm out. I'm out. You broke.
Boba Fett's gonna be walking out of a thing, and some blind person is going to like try to bump into him, but he'll have an awareness of where he is. And he's like, oh man, like I always have great reflexes around blind people. That's one thing that always happens with me.
Yes.
I'm Boba Fett after all.
You know, Boba Fett, you need to get that hair trigger on that jetpack fixed.
Yeah. Nope. No time. I'm Boba Fett.
Oh, God. Brian, for our audio listeners, you're looking at the face of a broken man.
Accurate. I want to go to Diamond Town. I want to live there now. It's a better story.
Hey, I wonder if all the bounty hunters from that one scene in Empire Strikes Back are all going to be like in the same. Maybe they're having a birthday party or something.
They're in a bowling league.
Yeah. It's like, when will we ever get together like this again?
IG-88, I do not know. You remember when we were all at Star Wars Celebration and I did my Star Wars costume show for you guys?
Yes. That was great. That was amazing.
And you know, was bringing up all these great Star Wars characters and stuff and the different bounty hunters and stuff using all the found objects in the hotel. Remember how excited we were?
Pretty excited.
Remember those guys?
I guess the overarching thing, though, and we can kind of wrap up on this, is this is something that I think we all believe and I think frustrates us about geek culture a lot, is that we shouldn't reward things when they're not good because we're afraid that it's going to go away. And that's like the larger problem that I think exists in our little corner of the internet, which has now become more and more and more relevant in terms of pop culture, is that it's like, hey, look, if the flick isn't good, but it's catered toward you, like, you don't need to pretend that it's fantastic, because I have a hard time believing in 5 years that people are going to be putting Rogue One in the top 3 Star Wars movies like they are now. Like, I don't think that that's going to happen.
Are people really doing that?
Oh, yeah. Oh no. Yeah. And since I'm the guy who hates Rogue One professionally, TM, like that's all I get, is just like random tweets of like Empire, Rogue, New Hope, Episode 3, Jedi, Episode 7, all the cartoons and the novels too. Here's my list, and Rogue One's I don't know. I think it might be better than Empire when you think about it. It's actually just like it's a better movie than Empire when you think about it.
That's what I get. That's my entire Twitter feed. That's
all. You know, Superman versus Batman, you know, Batman versus Superman, you really, you know, if you watch the extended version, there's a lot more detail.
All right, if I play J-pop, does that mean we have to wrap things up? Does that cause it to happen?
Let's do picks. Go see. All right.
Rogue One.
Guys, this was a wonderful exercise of bad Justin, bad Andrew, and bad Brian. Now back to our normal selves. Guys, this is why I think it was such a great way to step aside and give fill out the universe more. You know, I thought the characters were so rich. What's his face? And that guy, you know, and the dude with the vacuum cleaner on his back. Really, really good and memorable. It's why there are so many memorable lines from this movie that I'm repeating all the time to my friends. And like when I want to play one of these characters so clearly defined, it's easy for me to pretend that I'm like them.
Yeah. Hey, I'm the dad. I work for the Empire. Oh, geez. I mean, I'm just working. Hey, I'll tell you what. If it weren't for my skills, I would. There would be no planet-killing death machine. My wife's dead. I've pushed my daughter into obscurity. Hey, what do you say I just kill myself? What if I killed myself and they wouldn't be able to build this thing?
Well, no, they said flat out it would get built anyways. They literally said that. It'd get built anyways. You know, listen, this suicide vest is getting up on somebody.
Yeah. Or, hey, if I build a intentional flaw into the thing, what if I actually just blew it up? What if here's a cheeky little idea?
Remember what they did with the other guys that helped build the battle station?
They killed them.
Because, like, you know what? We're not going to need to build one of these again.
Yeah.
And God, the warranty on this thing is great. You guys said it's worth, you know, you gave a 1,000-year warranty on this thing. And, you know, can't run the risk of you falling into, you know, the good guy hands or whatever. So at this point, we're going to kill you because, you know, we got this.
If you build it, they will come. Grand Moff Tarkin, Rogue One.
Oh my, I was like, I'm going to give you a good rule of thumb if you're trying to plan the Empire. It's called What Would Hitler Do?
Oh, jeez.
We got a new super gun.
All right, we can wrap it. There is one video that I did see that was like top 10 reasons why you like Rogue One, and I really liked it. I thought it was a funny video, and the same girl also did an audition for Jyn Erso that I thought was very funny. So watch those videos.
Roger that. My vote is for Backstroke of the West Highlights Part 1, a YouTube video in which it shows prequels with the translations to Chinese.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Superior. They have escaped. I should really feeds you all dog. Space General, you and not equal to, I think, severe. Smelly boy. Better to death than them.
So this is, yeah, this is what, Chinese back to English?
Yeah.
That's great.
Batter to death them.
All right.
Is a lemon avenues flying straightly.
Yeah.
All right. We love you guys.
It's been after.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.